buzzer McCord on its way.
Oh, my goodness.
They have to get in. No timeouts. They do.
Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, two fired basketball coaches that know a lot about basketball, a lot about life, probably more than you do in a lot of ways, but that's why you're listening. D Squared, we've had an interesting summer. We're going to have to kind of kick it back up a notch, kind of get in here about every week or so and educate the masses on the game of hoop and world and life, and just keep Andrew Luck out of it because we don't want him coddled.
No, you cannot coddle Andrew Luck. There's enough of that going on, Seth Greenberg.
You know, you were coddled also when you were down, you know, up three, you know, at the turn, but we'll get to that later. But, you know, we had a pretty interesting summer. We had the TBT, which we'll talk about later, but we also had a trip to the Bahamas. Got a chance to see Kentucky, the older Kentucky players, the newer Kentucky players, play against pretty good competition. We basically created a kumbaya between Dan Dokic and the Big Blue Nation. It was a beautiful thing. I mean, to see these two groups come together, smoke the peace pipe, and just hug it up was just an amazing experience. I mean, and it'll probably last until you do their first game and you say something bad about one of their players or their team. But, I mean, it was moving to me as an outsider looking in. What was your take about the week with the Big Blue Nation and the Kentucky program?
Oh, you are so full of it. And when you said smoke, I was thinking we were in the Bahamas. There are some things that are legal, and thankfully you and I stayed on point. I don't know. I thought it was great. I thought the 1,500 people that filled the joint were awesome, certainly awesome to you and me. I mean, they were great to us, and I thought Cal and let's take first. We coached in the fantasy experience. The guys in there were great. I beat you, by the way. I beat Franny twice, but that's a different story. And, of course,
anyone could have beaten my team.
That's true. But I thought that the team was the showpiece, the centerpiece, and I thought the team was really good. And I thought the team showed almost in one game midseason form. I they will play worse than they played against a Serbian team or a collection of different guys, but under the banner of the Serbian team, that were really good and trying to physically intimidate him. Seth, the most impressive thing I saw was a bunch of big, strong pros trying to intimidate the Wildcats, and the Wildcats said, nay, nay, Nanook, we're going to come right back at you. We're going to punch you in the mouth, and truthfully, they intimidated them. I thought it was a great trip, and John Calipari, after that game, was giddy about his team's toughness. I thought it was awesome, and I love the Big Blue Nation with all my heart and all my soul. How about that?
Well, now, can you explain once, what after they got punched in the face, they did what? They said what? You forgot.
Oh, they said, no. They said, nay, nay, Nanook, we're not doing this. We're going right back at you. No, you know, there are certain things that, yeah, they were not having it. And you saw it. I mean, look, they knew going into the one game that this was going to be the biggest test, the strongest team. And there was one dude, number 42, and you can make his name into a very vulgar saying if you'd like. But
Fundich.
Yeah, Fundich.
Fundich.
Yeah, he was trying to hurt folks. But, hey, they fought right back. It's going to be a good year in the Big Blue Nation. I don't think they're going undefeated, but I do think they're going to have a hell of a run here.
Well, I'll tell you, the SEC is loaded. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, the things that impressed me were the character of the kids.
Yes.
I mean, that's what impressed me, like, here's the deal. These kids take this trip to the Bahamas. They had 10 days of practice. They're playing good competition. You know, like I said, you know, they didn't play the Little Sisters of the Poor. They played good teams, not great teams. One team had a chance, two guys that could get drafted in the NBA. But those kids are lost in the game, and they're lost in each other. That's what impressed me the most. I thought they played really hard for a young group of kids. The hardest thing to do for a young team is to get them to play hard and redefine playing hard. I thought they played hard. The second thing is to take a bunch of guys to get them to play for each other. I can count on a hand how many bad shots I saw taken over those four games. And then, you know, you could see guys really appreciate each other's success. And then finally, you know, this is a talented group. I mean, it's a talented group that plays hard, that played together. And, you know, some guys emerged. I mean, I'm not sure everyone knew the Tyler Hero. When, you know, they knew he could make shots, but he showed a floor game. Keldon Johnson was, you call him Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges. I think he's more of a wing at this moment in time, but you know, he played really, really hard. And you could see how much these kids like ball, because when they weren't practicing or doing walkthrough, I mean, 2 hours, 2.5 hours before games, a good majority of those guys were in the gym. And to me, not just in the gym getting up shots, but those dudes were in the gym working on their games. And to me, that said something about them understanding, one, the responsibility of playing at Kentucky, and also their passion about getting better. Reed Travis, first reaction. What's first thing comes to your mind?
Stiff. My first reaction to him, but
not a stiff, but played.
No,
stiff.
Played stiff. Yeah, not a stiff. He's going to end up close to a double double guy. He's not going to average 19, but he's going to be, you know, somewhere around 12 to 14 points, 9, 8, 9, 10 rebounds. He's just a guy that goes after. But Seth, I want to get back to something else you said. Like, there's going to be teams of a lot less talent be a far, far more uncoachable than Kentucky. Kentucky, you said this. They were a terrific combination of playing hard, talent, and coachability. They were fantastic with that, and I hope it stays the whole year. Travis, to me, uncomfortable, a freshman, as you said numerous times, got better as the trip went on, hungry for the ball around the rim, going to be a big-time contributor, but he's not going to have the numbers that he had at Stanford.
Yeah, you know, we both said this. He's a freshman at Kentucky.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that, people go, wait a second, he's a fifth-year senior who's going to be Pac-12 player of the year. I understand that. That's at Stanford. That's on the farm. Stanford's a wonderful place. He's got a degree from there. He absolutely loved his experience there. But Kentucky's a different animal. I mean, Kentucky, look, they don't have a tree as a logo, as a mascot. I mean, I still never figured that one out.
I don't either.
Dancing around. But,
yeah.
I mean, like, Kentucky is a different cat. I mean, and the microscope you're under, the intensity, the players you're playing with, the expectation, it's just a totally different deal. And the players he's playing with, he's not going to be the focal point. He's going to be part of it. And I thought he pressed a little bit. I thought, you know, I had a chance to interview him after that last game, and he looked relieved. He looked like he was more comfortable. I thought each game he got a little more comfortable. But this is a totally different deal playing at Kentucky and playing at Stanford. Stanford's great. I mean, Stanford has a rich basketball tradition, but Kentucky is a different animal, and I think there's going to be a transition period that some people might not understand, but he's a freshman when it comes to playing under that microscope.
No question about it, and as you said, I thought he got better. He's not going to average. Kentucky fans think he's going to come in and average 25 and 15. It's not going to happen. There's too much there, and I'm looking at E.J. Montgomery. We saw only a glimpse of E.J. Montgomery. Post kid, left-handed, good feel around the bucket. He was hurt, didn't play. But, hey, you got those two guys down there on the block, along with P.J. Washington. Nick Richards, the most improved player, as I continue to say, even though the season hasn't started, along with Nick Ward from Michigan State. You're going to see they're okay on the block. In fact, they're better than everyone. I don't know about everybody, but they're better than most.
Yeah, you mentioned Nick Richards, and you fell in love with Nick Richards.
I did.
You did. The first game, he's blocking shots, knocking down baseline jumpers, dunking, demanding the ball. And you said it, Nick Richards, Nick Ward, who, from all indications, and I talked to some people at Michigan State yesterday, said he's had an incredible, not a good, but an incredible summer, which is important because, let's face it, his role has totally changed for Michigan State. But Nick Richards looked more comfortable. I like you said, not chin on the rim, but he played with his head up.
Yeah.
And he believed in himself, and he had some success. I think of any player on that team to have success, I thought Nick Richard was the most important player on Kentucky's team to walk out of there feeling good about himself.
If he didn't, and I don't know what it's going to take, because the guy averaged about 14 and 6 and blocked shots and looked totally, totally different. You know, John Robick, the assistant coach, said he was a starter in ceremony only, you know, last year. And that's right. Now he's a starter in earned effort, and he's going to continue to get better, I think, unless something happens, unless, you know, his psyche is such that a bad game sets him back. But he didn't have one out in the Bahamas. I thought he was really as good a player as Kentucky had on both ends of the court.
The two other upperclassmen to me impressed me. Quade Green, his ability to make shots. He struggled. He was 1 for 11 the first game. And, of course, first guy in the gym the next day. He actually came back after that first game at midnight and got up shots, which is pretty incredible in terms of holding himself accountable. But I thought his play, his leadership, his feel, his shot making, he picked his spots, he made good decisions. And then I thought as the week went along, PJ Washington did a lot of good things.
Hey, I got to talk about this. We got two clowns in the media, guys that have never been in a locker room.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Never even been in a locker room. I can't even remember the one clown's name. The other is like Sam V something, I don't know, that are saying, well, it's nauseous. It's told you and me to stay in our lane when comparing players. I'm thinking to myself, these two clowns have never been in a locker room other than ask for a quote or an autograph. And they're telling us to stay in our lane when we compare PJ Washington to Draymond Green in college. We didn't say he was. We just said that's how he played in college. The stupidity of these two guys saying stay in our lane irritated me. I don't know if you could tell. I don't even know the other guy's name. The one guy was Sam Vecini or something like that. I don't even know who he writes for. But I was hot. I don't mind you disagreeing with us, but don't tell the great Seth Greenberg and the lowly Dan Dockage to stay in our lane when it comes to evaluating players. We are player evaluation, damn it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You said it better than I could have said. Here's the deal. And we said, we actually prefaced it by saying we're not saying he's Draymond Green. He's Draymond Green-esque in terms of what potentially he could bring. And that we also mentioned that every team in the NBA is looking for a guy like Draymond Green because he's such a matchup nightmare, and that PJ Washington lost weight. He's in better shape. He had better bounce. He shot the ball well. He made some good decisions in the high post, not only scoring but passing, finished with either hand. And I thought that, as things went along and as he settled in, he played harder for longer periods of time. And don't you think that's the big thing you're asking your sophomores to do? How, like, the hardest thing for a young player to do, and we talked about it the whole week. Like, they played well the first game. Well, you know, or the first half of the first game, they're really good. How are they going to bounce back in the second half? Are they going to be able to maintain an intensity? But the other thing is, your sophomores that come back, they've got to be different. Whether they're Kentucky, or they're Virginia Tech, or they're Bowling Green, they've got to be a different player. That light bulb's got to be on a little bit brighter. And I thought that the sophomore class, the KG veterans of Kentucky, the sophomore class, their games were significantly different in terms of their approach, how effective they were, their feel, and like you said, short walkthroughs, yet whatever John emphasized in those walkthroughs, those teams, and led by the sophomores, were able to pretty much execute.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you say sophomores used to be, you said, well, your seniors have got to come back. But in this day and age, particularly at Kentucky, your sophomores, I was so impressed with Quad A Green on the court, but I was also impressed off the court. You know, again, I go back to this fantasy camp where we had managers, kids from the team that helped us coach, and Quad A Green was as energetic as anybody. He was so much fun to be around. And that's what I liked about their point guard situation. They've got guys that have true energy, quickly, real energy. Hagans, great energy. Quad A Green, great energy. There's nothing worse, in my opinion, in basketball than a dull point guard. Dull point guard gets you fired and on our podcast. You got to be lively as a point guard. And I thought those three guys, in particular Quad A Green, were really lively in every aspect of their life. Working out, as you said, doing a bunch of good stuff. So, all right, man, looks like Kentucky's going to go undefeated, challenge the 76 Hoosiers, and, man, no flaws according to you and me.
No, I think, you know, here's the deal. I don't get, and I got killed by people, I don't get too excited about their play. I don't get too excited about Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett and Duke and what they did in Canada. Because let's face it, those two kids were terrific in Canada, playing against, you know, Canadian college teams. That would be probably the equivalent of Division II teams here in the States. And it's a great experience. They had great crowds. It was great energy. You know, Zion Williamson's explosiveness, his second jump, incredible. Did a nice job of moving without the ball. R.J. Barrett in transition was like, punched it on anyone and everyone that dared to get underneath him. They, too, were pretty unselfish, although Barrett took some bad shots. But I don't get too excited, and Duke played without two good players, Cam Reddish, obviously, and the Jones kid, the little point guard that I think is important to them. What do you think Duke learned? Because here's the one thing is concerned. Learn from their experience as opposed to Kentucky, because the one thing they learned is that Marquise Bolden looks like their third big. That's a concern.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of who their shot makers are. Now, I thought they played really hard and they played without some dudes. And DeLaurier looked like he has a chance to be an undersized five, which makes them athletic defensively.
Where is Bolden? You know, like when Bolden came out, was he as highly ranked as anybody?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, top 10 guy, top 5 guy.
I know. What has happened with him? I'll say this. I thought that the two freshman kids played fearless. You know, if we're going to say Tyler Hero is fearless, and I think we've got to say Williamson, sure. You know, and Barrett were fearless, and I think that's good. I think that's expected. I do think that Williamson showed that. It showed me anyway that when I saw him in high school, it looked like he was playing against my son Andrew when he was 12. That's the guys he looked like he was playing against. And, you know, he showed that he is what he is. He's a big, strong kid that runs like crazy, has a great second jump, fearless basketball player. Let's be honest. I mean, the dude, those two guys are going to come in. And but I'm curious to see, and you mentioned Jones and you mentioned Reddish. I'm curious to see how this all fits with Coach K. Jump shooting, shooting the basketball, shot selection, because you mentioned it. I did think that Barrett took some bad shots, and I do think that Williamson could take bad shots. I don't know about Jones. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen Reddish in a college setting. But when you guys got guys that initially are taking bad shots, I'd be anxious to see as the season moves on how that goes. But let's be honest, man. They're talented as hell. They're going to be connected. K's going to have to figure out, like he did last year, we're going to play zone, we're going to play man-to-man. What are we going to be? How are we going to guard? Are we deep enough to guard? Can those freshman kids guard, or is it a liability? I thought that their trip showed I took less from their trip than I did from Kentucky's trip. The one thing that I did take from Duke's trip is that you clearly establish you've got two guys that are big-time scorers, and then we'll see how it goes when others fit in. But Kentucky, you didn't get that. Kentucky, you got a bunch of guys. I think they established that a bunch of guys could go get buckets. So I think that's going to be interesting for Duke.
I think Duke's going to be a man-to-man team. I think they're going to try to go get back to where they were.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. Ball reversal, pressure in the basketball, trying to create some offense by just getting pass lines. Like when I coached against Duke, they didn't let you run offense. All right, they switched everything, and then all of a sudden you had to go make a play off the bounce. They wouldn't let you get into what you wanted to get into. This Duke team is going to be undersized, and because they're going to be undersized in terms at the five, because I don't think Bolden in the end will be a significant factor, now all of a sudden, you know, can they get in passing lanes? I mean, they could play Zion Williamson at five for all I know.
I mean,
and he could be explosive and a matchup nightmare, and they're going to be really good in transition. And two good players. Reddish has a really good floor game. I was with him in Italy a year ago. Really good floor game, high basketball IQ. I don't think he shoots it great, but terrific kid with great length. And Jones is a point guard, as Howard Garfinkel would say, guard. He's a play starter. He's a playmaker. He's going to pitch the ball ahead in transition. I mean, they're going to be just fine. But let's put it all in perspective. Notre Dame went to the Bahamas, played a bunch of teams from the Bahamas, won by 60 a game. You know. Providence went to Spain and they're rolling people. You know, like, let's not lose our minds. It's August. This is a starting point for all these teams. It's a long season. A lot of stuff happens. Forget about on the court. Dan, think about all the things that happen with your teams off the court during the course of the season that impact practice, teams getting better, trust, chemistry, and everything else. I mean, like, the littlest of things can take your team and set it sideways. So when everyone's losing their minds, I just don't lose my mind like that. I mean, do you agree?
I think I'll say this. I think if Kentucky hadn't beaten these teams, because the teams ultimately that they played were okay, they weren't great, but if they hadn't beaten them, then I would lose my mind. I mean, seriously, I always felt like, man, you know whether you're athletic enough, you know whether, you know, by playing teams. And I think if you don't beat those teams, then I lose my mind. If you beat those teams, then you're just par for the course. Let's move on. That's kind of how I feel about it, Seth. And let's be honest, the teams that you just mentioned, taking Notre Dame out of it, because I went on that trip in 08 to the Bahamas and played those teams. And if you didn't beat them by 1,000, the games didn't even matter. I mean,
exactly.
They were silly games. But I didn't think Dukes, and I didn't think I didn't think Kentucky's were silly games. So if you didn't beat them by, you know, double digits or, you know, run out on them, then I think you'd lose your mind. But it was, since you did, it's business as usual. Hey, let me ask you a question. You ready? I want to stir it up a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Duke goes to Canada, right? And has the largest crowd, like 22,000 over three games or whatever it is. And everybody's telling me it's all about Zion Williamson and
RJ Barrett.
Yeah, RJ Barrett. Okay, let me ask you a question. If and they should be paid because, you know, look at the draw that Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett is. If those guys, same guys, went over there and didn't have Duke on their chest and weren't part of a Duke trip, how many people you think would have showed up at those games?
No, they would have been just pickup games.
Of course. So I say to all of you, my weekly shot is, what's the brand worth? Is all I'm asking. What's the brand worth? I'll continue on with the show now, Seth.
Well, all right.
What's the brand worth?
I got a question. You have a Mad Ants jersey?
Mm-hmm.
Hansborough Mad Ants jersey?
Yeah.
I figured I was going to get that once you got to that point.
No, I you know, people are mad because because Michigan announced their starting quarterback, Shea Patterson, then the Michigan people started selling number two jerseys. And people are like, well, see, it's just a coincidence. And I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, sell a number two jersey that doesn't have the Michigan brand on it. What's it worth? I don't know. I don't know. I think the brand matters is all I'm saying. And, yeah, don't even get me started on the Tyler Hansbrough. Nobody ever bought a Mad Ants Tyler Hansbrough jersey when he played in Fort Wayne. But everybody and their mother bought a North Carolina one. Why? Because of the brand. Stop with all the player stuff.
And that public service announcement was brought to you by Dan Dockett.
Yes, sir.
And he will pontificate on that throughout the season.
Of course.
But, you know, in the end, I do. And I also think people lose their minds. But how many guys' jerseys move the needle?
Well, not very many. And, Seth, can I give a warning to our listeners? I got in an argument on Twitter, and it wasn't started by me. It was started by one of our ESPN's national radio hosts about payment of players, and he pontificates about it, Seth, and he didn't even know that players actually got cash. He didn't know that my son was getting $540 every 2 weeks. So he not when he didn't know and he found out, and he said, well, it's not enough. People that complain about these things don't even know what the kids are getting. Like, I don't mind, like Jay Billis. Jay knows what they're getting. Jay's had a son. Okay. He knows what they're getting. So Jay wants to go off on it. Good for Jay. He has a difference of opinion, agree to disagree, all that kind of stuff. But when dudes in the national media don't even know what kids are getting and they're pontificating on it, it's a bad look for journalism. And you know I'm all about journalistic
integrity.
I know,
you are. Yeah. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about those new NCAA decisions on the summer and recruiting and
we got
agents,
a lot to say.
A lot of stuff. And by the way, you talk about, you think Baker Mayfield is going to sell any underwear?
Why does Baker Mayfield just shut up and play football? Cleveland already has the vision of Johnny Manziel in their brain. They don't need another vision.
All right. So Johnny Manziel's out, Baker Mayfield's in, and we'll talk NCAA when we get back. Dan, NCAA, while we were in the Bahamas, having a wonderful time, me spending some time in the embassy. Always good to hang out in the embassy. you know, came up with some new rules, projected rules and philosophies on summer basketball, on players being represented by agents, by players who don't get drafted, can come back to college. There's so much to what was presented by this committee. The problem is, to me, the committee basically didn't coordinate with their partners. They
Yes.
didn't coordinate with the NBA. They didn't coordinate with USA Basketball. And quite honestly, they didn't even coordinate with the fellow members. It was almost like they were in such a rush. August. We've got to come up with a decision in August. Such a rush to come up with closure that they really, instead of coming together as a group with all the partners sitting at a table with a shared vision, they instead threw something out that they threw a piece of spaghetti on the wall, and you know what? To me, it didn't stick.
Seth, that's the most disappointing thing. You know, we had a nice chat, and you talked to Jim Tooley, the head of USA Basketball, on the air, and they were a little bit blindsided. They had discussed certain things, but they were a little bit blindsided. I don't know how that can happen. I really don't. I mean, if you're going to call upon an organization to assist your organization, it seems to me common sense dictates that you work in partnership with that organization and there are no surprises. But there certainly were. I think moving forward, there probably will be another lay of the land type of announcement. You know, who is going to determine quote unquote elite players? Because USA Basketball certainly didn't want to get into that business, or at least that's what Mr. Tooley said. What is going to happen with agents? I know high school federations are not exactly excited about the prospect of the NCAA by not necessarily encouraging agents for high school, but certainly by saying it's okay. It seems to be encouraging agents for high school kids, at least according to the high school people that I spoke with. They're not happy. So you've got groups that are involved and directly impacted by the statements that aren't happy. So I would imagine, Seth, at some point down the road, maybe early in the season, maybe before the season, we're going to see maybe a bit of a clarification of what transpired here back, you know, a few weeks ago. It's just my gut feeling. I could be dead wrong, but it seems to me that that's needed in this case because there are groups that are significant groups. Look, high school, Georgia High School, you know, I saw coaches calling for emergency meetings. You know, what are we going to do about this? We don't want agents in our kids' lives. I don't know what they can do about it. I don't know what ultimately the end is, but I think you're going to see a clarification, Seth. I do.
I think there are so many things that came out in this release.
All right, let's
go one thing at a time. First of all, they said, all right, so high school seniors, if USA Basketball, which USA Basketball didn't want any part of, are deemed elite prospects, they can have agents. But whoa, wait a second. That's not going to happen until 2022 because it's insignificant until the NBA collective bargaining agreement comes back up and the NBA decides to draft rising seniors and eliminate one and done. So like that whole position that the NCAA came out on is insignificant. Absolutely means
dressing.
Nothing.
Window dressing.
Yeah. It's fluff. It has no significance whatsoever. Shouldn't have been in there. Boom. And I'm not an NCAA basher. I just thought that was absurd. Then there are other thing about, well, you know, if you put your name in the draft and you're invited to the combine and you do not get drafted, you can come back to school. But I got a question for you. If you put your name in the draft and you're not invited to the combine and you don't get drafted, you can't come back to school. Does that make any sense?
No, it makes no sense to me. That doesn't make sense to me. My thing is I'm glad that they allow you to come back. I think that's fine. Coaches are going to have to be a little more organized on who's coming in, who's currently there. Scholarship numbers are going to be important. But I don't understand that at all. Let's be honest, Seth. A kid at Ohio State or Indiana, whatever, may get invited to the combine, but a marginal kid, you know, Jayshon Tate, for example, if Jayshon Tate came out, Jayshon Tate's going to be looked at by a ton of NBA teams, but he's not going to be invited to combine because they know what they've seen him enough and he's not at that level. So why shouldn't Jayshon Tate, if he comes out after his junior year, be able to come back? I think it's idiotic. I don't understand. I don't understand if you're going to do it, why not just say, look, if you announce for the NBA draft and you're not drafted, you have the opportunity to come back to your school. And if your school has given up its scholarship, then you have the opportunity to transfer, but only if the school has given away your scholarship, you can transfer immediately and be eligible. I don't understand why that isn't just the way it's done and away you go.
100%. I mean, like, here's the deal. If you're allowed to come back, all right, and you put your name in the draft, and the school that you left does not have a scholarship available, then you should be able to go anywhere you want. If
right
you're
now.
Good enough, you know what's going to happen? Here's the deal. This school's going to hold a scholarship. You know, that's the deal. And you know what? All those fifth-year guys that are waiting to see who's coming back, it's just all those unsigned seniors and all those other guys, they're going to wait until everything basically falls out. How about the camp business? You think the NCAA should be in the camp business? I mean, like regional camps? I mean, so these kids are going to get one opportunity to play in a regional camp with guys they've never played with a coach they've never played for, and they're going to be all these mid-majors, low majors, D2s, D3s, NAIAs, lower high majors. They're going to get basically that are not invited to the top 100 elite because basically they're creating all this stuff for the top 100 players. Those guys are basically going to get one basically opportunity in these regional camps and one weekend in July. I mean, so the NCAA is in the camp business. And then like, so we're going to have the NBA Players Association involved in this, and that's great. So they're going to be coached basically by a bunch of former pros that have had agents You don't think they're going to have some type of interest in these guys and impacting these guys or helping an agent or helping a money man? I mean, to me, it's not that hard. The system isn't that bad. Make the people now that are running camps, that are running tournaments, make them a little more accountable. You're going to eliminate the hoop group and the number of kids, like, just I'm using them as an example, as an East Coast group, kind of an offset of the old five-star. They get 500-600 kids at their camp. They help a lot of young people get a chance to get to go to college, get into school, get scholarships at all different levels. You're basically saying, well, you know, you can't go to their, you know, coaches can't go to their events. That's absolutely absurd.
Seth, I get so, and I can't change anybody's thinking, but I get so disgusted when I hear how awful summer basketball is. You said it earlier. You know what? The opportunities that so many kids get to be seen, if you're going to limit that, what are kids going to do? I mean, they're going to be on the streets. What do you want out of this? What I want out of this is, look, I want guys to be certified to coach so we know who the hell's coaching people. I want guys that are, you know, I want as many kids playing in the summer as can possibly play. That's what I want. I do not want limiting kids' options because the woods are full of kids that went to a camp, didn't play on a sanctioned team, were somewhere in the corner in Vegas. Coach went to see him. Next thing you know, he's an All-American. I mean, we've heard of that millions of times. Not millions, but we've heard of that a ton of times in college basketball. I coached AAU for 4 years. I saw it. It's not perfect, but name me something that is. But, man, so many kids got opportunities. I remember 8 o'clock in the morning, we're playing some team. I didn't even know who the hell it was. The other team had a really good player. A bunch of coaches there. Not a sanctioned team, just a team. Happened a lot. To limit kids' opportunities, to say only the best kids can go to these type of camps is ludicrous, asinine, ill-informed, whatever other big word I can say. I wish I had four-syllable words so I could sound really smart, but I don't. It's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I mean, stay, you know, the old thing, stay in your lane. The NCAA has a job. It surely not, shouldn't be in the camp business.
It shouldn't be. And why would it want to be?
And you know what? USA Basketball shouldn't be in the camp business, nor should the NBA.
No, just look. The system is what the system is. Yes, shoe companies have influence, but are shoe companies really wrong? I mean, I get it. The headline is, you know, the guy from Adidas or whatever, but that's fine. But that's
one of the best guys you've ever met in your life.
Yeah, and that's one guy. How many kids are being helped by this that aren't Kobe Bryant, that aren't Zion Williams? I mean, the number is so many, and we don't. You know what we forget, Seth? We forget that a lot of kids can get scholarships to NAIA and Division II schools. We forget that a lot of kids can get entrance into Harvard. We forget a lot of kids can get into Williams College, where Duncan Robinson came up. Being seen by a coach at Wabash College is a pretty big deal for kids here in Indiana. So I think the whole thing is, it helps colleges too. Look, I'm at Bowling Green. My recruiting budget was minus $10,000 until I raised money. Guess what? So, you know what? I go to Vegas, and I see 8 million kids. What am I going to do on a zero recruiting budget? Drive to school, to school, to school, to school, to school, to camp, to camp, to camp, to camp? No, I got to see them all in one place. Great.
Yeah, and you know what? High school, there are states don't allow coaches to coach their kids in the summer, like the state of Connecticut. Their high school coaches all of a sudden, like, I hate stereotypes. Hate stereotypes. I mean, just it's one of the most awful things in the world, the stereotypes. So, we're stereotyping all high school coaches are good and all AAU grassroots coaches are bad. The shoe companies are bad. Well, they're bad when they're running AAU, you know, grassroots events. They're not bad when they're writing million-dollar checks to universities.
Right.
Isn't it amazing that, like, if this is so bad, if the shoe companies have been so bad and so evil, then why don't all the colleges just give the money back that they get every single year? I mean, because you know what? I don't hear anyone getting in line saying, hey, Nike, you know what? We really don't want your money. That's all right. Because you're the evil empire. And you know what? You're running these grassroots programs and helping these young kids, giving them experience, taking them all over the country, some taking them out of the country, giving them lifetime experiences. But that's evil because, to me, absolutely a joke, ridiculous, absurd. And I'm not an NCAA basher, but you can't have it both ways. If they're bad for grassroots basketball, you know what? Then you know what? Maybe they're influencing the players on your team as well, which we also know that, you know, let's face it, that's what's being the accusations that are being made. So why are you taking their money?
Right.
Back?
Seth, I would like to see one coach, one college basketball coach of influence lead. Now, what do I mean by that? Exactly what you just said. All right. I'd like to see somebody lead. Look, I don't want shoe companies involved, so I'm going to give back the money that they give me. I would like to see one. Then I would listen to that coach tell me about shoe companies, or then I would listen to that coach on a committee, or then I would listen to that coach whose players are on these committees. I would listen. I would like to see one coach that doesn't like the 50-year transfer rule come out and simply say, look, I'm not going to hurt a program like Cleveland State, who got absolutely decimated by it. I'm not going to hurt a program like Bowling Green. I'm not going to hurt a program, and I'm not going to take a 50-year transfer. Now, I'm all fine with taking 50-year transfers. Hell, my son was a 50-year transfer. I get all that. But if you don't like it, I'd like to see one freaking coach stand up, have the stones to give back his money if the almighty shoe company is such a disgrace and is so horrible that they can't be involved. But yet I'm wearing from head. When's the last time you as a coach or me as a coach bought anything? We never bought shoes.
Even right? Don't do them now.
Right. I mean, yeah, right. Honest to God, I sit there and I listen and I look at.
But here's the thing. I don't think the coaches, and this is my. I don't think the coaches think that the shoe companies are bad. I really don't. I think the coaches would like it the way it is. Now, but the ADs and the presidents, they're taking that money too now. And you know what? Those ADs and presidents, they got gear allotments and everything else. So I mean, they're not. Here's the deal: the administrators are not giving any of that money back yet. The NCAA is trying to condemn a whole industry. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, like Adidas or Nike or whatever. Like, I know Jimmy Gatto. He's about as good. He's the salt of the earth. Now, whether he made a good decision, bad decision, whether it's legal, illegal, that guy's not a bad guy. But if you think that Jimmy Gatto's a lone wolf, come on, give me a break.
Well, here's the deal, Seth.
Everyone's got an interest. It's a business.
Yeah, and let's go to the presidents, right? I mean, one of the things that I think I read, and I want to make sure that I'm right about this, you would know, I think I read where now presidents are going to be held accountable for their athletic department. But let me ask you this. You got a president that's doing everything for a university in terms of academics, right? He's focusing on making the business school the best, the school of education. Why the hell is he held accountable? I mean, I get that he's running the whole thing, but man, I'm so into personal accountability. Like, you screwed up. It's your fault. You did it. Not the guy that hired. This isn't the mafia where you brought the guy in. I don't know, Seth. The thing that I know is I'd like to see one of these presidents, one of these ADs that sits there and talks about the evilness of a shoe company, not take the money, give the money back. Indiana, give the money back if Adidas is no good. You know, Duke, give the money back if Nike's no good. If your president, and I'm not saying they do, I'm just using an example. If you think that the president or you think or that the shoe company is so evil that we have to regulate it, don't take the damn money, give it back. See what happens.
Sounds good. And by the way, now that we've solved the world of the NCAA and summer basketball, Gabe, I got a question for you, Gabe. Yes. We've been pontificating for a while, but you know what? Do we have any fans of the game that would like to ask us some questions?
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, our first question comes from a Coach Hergott. What's Tom Crean doing that other Georges couldn't do, hopefully to catch Kentucky?
Well, first of all, I mean, Kentucky can't be what you're trying to catch. You get trying to build the best program you can possibly build at Georgia. Georgia's a world-class university. They've got terrific facilities. They've got a tremendous commitment. What the SEC's done is they've gone from a league of basically making commitment to the head coach to difference between having a team and having a program. They've committed to having basketball programs from facilities to support services and everything else. And that's why you saw 8 teams in the NCAA tournament last year from the SEC. And this year you might even see 9. That's how good the league is and will continue to be. Tom Crean has built programs. He built a program at Marquette. He did a very good job helping rebuild the program at Indiana. He will recruit players. He will evaluate players. He will coach players. The whole idea of, well, you got to catch Kentucky. Who catches Kentucky? It's like catching Duke. What you want to do is you want to be an NCAA tournament team year in and year out. You want to have consistency because if you get into the tournament, you're 4 games away from being in the Final Four. And that's basically, instead of worrying about Kentucky, look at it in a big picture, evaluate, recruit, develop, coach, and create consistency. And I think that's what Tom will try to do, and I think he has the ability to do that. What do you think there,
Coach? I think you're absolutely right. I do. I think you are absolutely right. I think you hit it right on the head. And let's be honest, when you all of a sudden get in the tournament, I mean, truth of the matter is, you're two games away. I mean, you said four to Final Four, but Sweet 16's become a really big deal. I always thought it was a big deal, but you're two games away from, hey, this program is elite. You know, this program is rolling. And then you take your chances. And look, what you got to go by history. What Tom did at Indiana, based on what was left there, hell, I knew it firsthand when I was kicking guys off, was epic. And he caught Michigan State in the league. He didn't get to the Final Four. He didn't get to where, you know, people think that he should, but he caught Michigan State inside the league. So history says they will have a quality team. History says he'll recruit smartly. History says that if he, truth of the matter, if you ever coach AAU, you've been to AAU tournaments, you know Atlanta's chock full of guys that can really go. History says he'll recruit them. So, you know, I don't know that he's going to catch Kentucky. Kentucky's one of the, you know, two or three all-time programs, but just do what you do, as Seth said, and everything will be good.
All right, next question comes from Ryan. Does Kansas have the best roster in college basketball?
Ooh. Well, I'll let you go first, Nate, and then I will jump in.
Well, I think a little bit of it depends on the Lawson twins. I'm going to say probably they're right there with anybody. But you know what? And this is where I like Bill Self maybe better than anybody in the country for all the drama that surrounds Bill Self, and for all the, he's Teflon, man. He doesn't react. He just continues to do his job, and everybody there lets him do his job. The Lawson guys concern me, and the reason I say them is because when they left Memphis, they couldn't have been more disrespectful to Tubby Smith, a guy who has won a national championship, a guy who's built things. Now they're at Kansas. Now they've had a year maybe to grow up. If they have grown up and they are not me guys, they are I guys, they are KU guys, they are Rock Chalk Jayhawk, and into everything that Bill Self has preached, and everybody, Roy Williams before him and everybody else before them, then yes, Kansas will be as good as anybody. If not, it could be a little bit of an interesting year. You'll take the field because you get hit in the head by too many rocks when you were a kid, Seth. I'll take Kansas in the Big 12 today, tomorrow, the next day, until proven wrong.
K-State now, my man. The Fighting Bruce Webbers are pretty good now.
Yes, they are.
I mean, a guard play maybe. If a guard play shows up at West Virginia, here's the deal on Kansas. I think Kansas has a chance to be terrific. I think Udoka Asabuki makes them different if he continues to get better, because no one has a dude like him. I mean, he's just a massive human being. Having said that, the Lawson Twins, I 100% agree with you. Who are they? I mean, because their whole act at Memphis, to me, got old. It just got old. I mean, and like you, everyone has a right to transfer. I got no problem with guys. If you're not happy, you have a right to transfer. You don't have a right to trash a guy with the character and the class and the integrity of Tubby Smith. That's just not the right thing to do. That's number one. They've got a point guard, Charlie Moore, transfer from Cal. All right, pretty good, interesting guy. Another guy sitting out. Bill Self does a great job with guys sitting out because he immerses them in the culture and he coaches guys that are sitting out. He's not afraid to coach his good players, which is important. Here's a guy that, to me, will make them different. Quentin Grimes. I had a chance to be in Italy with Quentin Grimes last summer. That dude just knows how to play. Here's the question mark for Kansas. Silvio D'Souza, he's been mentioned in all this stuff. Is he going to be eligible? That's a good question. LeGerald Vick is coming back. He wasn't coming back. He is coming back. He wasn't coming back. He is coming back. How all that plays out will be interesting. In terms of the question, in terms of talent, they've got experience with their redshirts. They've got a unique guy in Udoka Asabuki. They've got depth at the point guard, whether it's Dotson, Grimes, or Charlie Moore. It's a really talented team. There's no doubt about it. Bill Self, as you said, Dan, he has the ability to get guys to come together, and he coaches them. He has a way of really knowing how far he can push his guys without being demeaning, but getting their attention. So, are they going to be one of the more talented teams in the country? You look at Kansas, you look at Gonzaga, you look at maybe Nevada. You've got some teams out there that will be good, and it's not just Duke and Kentucky, because I'll tell you, like I keep on saying, the SEC's got four or five teams that are really good. I think the one league, I would just ask you, How good is the Big Ten this year?
No, no. You know what I'm curious about in the Big Ten? Wisconsin. Wisconsin came out at the end of the year, didn't make tournament. Davison had 30-some against Michigan State. I'm curious about them, and I'm curious about Purdue. I think Indiana's going to be good. I think Juwan Morgan's terrific on the block. I think that Romeo Langford, everybody's in love with. I think Michigan State's going to be Michigan State. I don't think they'll go 16-2. Ohio State, if they go 15-3 again, Chris Holtmann needs to be coach of the world. I look at the Big Ten and I say, I don't know. Purdue lost so much, right? But their culture's so good. You know, Wisconsin, I already mentioned. What's Minnesota going to do? I have literally no clue. Penn State was coming, but all of a sudden Tony Carr leaves. Tony Carr was the straw that stirs the drink, the Reggie Jackson, you know, that kind of thing. Iowa has been Iowa. Same exact thing. Middle of the pack.
Come on, Coach. They got to have a breakthrough. I mean, I went through the Big Ten yesterday.
I know.
They got dudes. Now, I don't know about their point guard play, Bohannon, but I mean.
I like Bohannon. Tyler Cook's really good.
I mean, yeah. What's Garza? I mean, I don't know how good Moss is. You like Bohannon?
Yeah.
I mean, they got a lot of guys.
JAG, just another guy. I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know that they're more talented than Indiana.
Indiana's front court?
Pretty good.
I mean, you.
Juwan Morgan is the best one-on-one post scorer, not named Ethan Happ, in the Big Ten. Juwan Morgan gets the ball on the block. So, they have a kid named Thompson. Darren Thompson was a running back in Minnesota. His son is there. He sat out. He's a monster. I've watched him practice. He's big. He's strong. I don't know, but I know that they got enough. Iowa should be. I'm with you. Iowa should be. Michigan. I looked at Michigan's starting lineup the other day. It's pretty damn good. You know, Eli Brooks coming off the bench with the Simpson, and you got the kid that made the shot. I'm forgetting his name right now. God dang it. I know all these kids. Livers is there. Teske played really well. They should be good. Are they going to have a great team? I don't know. Michigan State maybe would have to carry that mantle. But a bunch of guys that are a bunch of teams that are a bunch of what-ifs, in my opinion.
Maryland, Bruno Fernando.
Yeah.
Morsell. Cowan, that's a good place to start. They lost Jackson, and even though they lost Herter,
Herter was the surprise of the year to me. Like, honest to God, Herter going in the top 20 or whatever he went, shocked. The good player, nice player, but my God, all of a sudden Fernando's an athlete. Fernando and Cowan's a winner. But again, here's another team, Seth. Like, all right. Last year, I think people pretty much settled in on Michigan State was going to be really good and Purdue was going to be real good. Haas and Edwards. You know, Carson Edwards back with Purdue. Supposedly one of the top five players in the country. He's 5 foot nothing. I don't know.
What about my man Matty Harms?
Yeah, Matty ball game with the hair. People say he gained weight. He gained a little beef, did it the Purdue way. He's going to be good. He got a little exposed in the tournament. Now he's full time. He can block a shot, I'll tell you that much. But now he's full time. I don't know. They lose Thompson, Matthias, Haas, Vince Edwards to the NBA. I mean, that's pretty good foursome, boss.
Well, here's the deal. There are some people, and I'm not a big believer in this. There are some people, I guess Gabe wants to ask this question. I'm going to answer it first and blow it up, but I'm going to let Gabe ask the question.
Well, I mean, our last question of the day is from Kevin Litz. He's wondering if it's a soul-searching year for Turgeon.
What do you mean soul-searching?
Man,
where's his soul? Where does he have to find it? In a closet?
Is it the practice gym? Is it the end of the line for him?
Hey, I got a question. Dan, where's your soul?
My soul left a long time ago.
I don't know where your soul is.
Is soul searching code for hot seat?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
Mark Turgeon's not on the hot seat. He's done a very good job at Maryland.
I don't know about that, boss.
Not a great job. I said a very good job.
No. I'm not saying that. He's done a very good job, but I don't know. I don't know the satisfaction level. And
they don't have an AD.
I was just going to say that. Let's be honest. When there is upheaval, as we're seeing with Michigan football, not saying it always translates, but let me put it to you this way. It would behoove Mark Turgeon to get his team in the NCAA tournament. That's all. I'm not saying he's on. I don't like
hot seat. I'm not a hot seat guy.
I'm not either. Our guy Goodman, he was a hot seat guy. All these guys are hot seat. I'm not a hot seat guy. But I will say this. Maryland is more professional sports than it is college sports when it comes to their basketball. They are more, Indiana's always been college. Purdue college environment, no booing, that kind of stuff. Maryland's not like that. And I feel, undeservedly, because I think Mark's done a great job, that there is a little bit of rumblings around there.
I think that Gary Williams potentially could be the interim athletic director at Maryland, which would be interesting. And I think that that will put some of that to rest. Because
all right, let me ask you this. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
Because I just think that he understands. I mean, like, the one thing about Gary, if he's the interim AD, is he understands that, you know what, you're not going to compete for a national championship every year. And that the transition to the Big Ten, as good as it's been financially, is a totally different environment. There are no natural rivalries for Maryland in that conference.
All right, let me ask you this.
They're an outsider looking in the Big Ten, in my opinion.
I don't disagree. But let me ask you this. You know we've seen this. We've seen it with Michigan football. I'm not going to name names. The longtime former coach isn't always helpful to the new guy or the guy in current place. He is externally, but internally, would Gary Williams, is he supportive of the guy currently in the seat? Because coaches coach, as you and I both know very, very well.
Oh, I know where you're going with this one.
We got egos, and we're not always, let's put it, the history says coaches are not always supportive of guys because they don't want to see their legacies diminished. Do you think Gary would be a supportive guy?
Yeah, I do, because, I mean, it's hard to, you know, Gary Williams court, you can't take it off.
Right.
He's got a national championship. The one thing that they've done Maryland horrendously is that they need to build a statue of Lefty Driesell in front of the Comcast Center. There's no doubt about it. Charles G. Lefty Driesell, what he did to Maryland back in the day is absolutely incredible. That's just my opinion. He's in the Hall of Fame now. Do it while he's alive. Build a statue of the left-hander. I think Gary, you know, Gary's, you know, a different cat. He's a great guy, but I think that Turge has done a good job with the respect
too.
With
yep.
him and I think he also understands that as long as the guy's not cutting corners, because Gary, that infuriated him, as long as the guy's not cutting corners and doing it the right way and is a good coach, I think if he was the interim AD, he would stick by him. And you know what the great thing about this is, Dan? This is just the beginning, the start of the new year of Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. And if people pay attention and go to Apple Podcasts and wherever else you can find us and download us, and rate us and give us all the good feedback that obviously we deserve, then you know what? You're going to get more of these morsels so that as the season begins, the one thing Dan Dockage can do, he'll give you a bona fide winner. And he will help you prepare for however you try to prepare for the coming season. Wouldn't you agree with that, Daniel?
I agree. And also, I would say this, Seth, and I'm getting ready to tweet this out. This might be our finest podcast. We covered a lot of ground. We always cover a lot of ground. And if you want a vanilla podcast, this is not your podcast. We're going to give it to you. We're going to shoot you straight. Probably get called into the principal's office once or twice, as I have to go right now at 11:30 because of some shenanigans on my radio show. I got to go see the principal. But no, I think this might be our finest podcast, and I think this is the world's greatest podcast, aptly named.
Gabe, you have anything to add to that, my friend?
I don't. I think we can leave it there.
Just download us, and we're wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.